For WFHB in Bloomington, this is Hereabouts,
a collaboration with the IU Asian Culture Center.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hereabouts Asian American Midwest Radio. I'm Kayla Machin Garvin, and I'm here today with Lloyd Suh. Lloyd, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Lloyd Suh. I'm a playwright and arts administrator in New York and a graduate of Indiana University, class of 1998.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lloyd. I've been looking forward to talking to you both about your experiences sort of in the artistic community and also about your time here at IU. And as a graduate, it's always great when we have people on the program who are both out in the world, you know, working and organizing and also who were a part of the IU community. So you're a playwright as well as the director of artistic programs at the LARC in New York City, and you did your undergrad program here. Did your time at IU influence the work that you do now? And if so, how did that come about?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, before I came to IU, I knew that I wanted to be a writer of some kind, and I entered my undergraduate studies mostly focused on being a fiction writer. My degree ultimately is through the English department. But there was something about the experience of being at IU that made me feel just really eager to get involved with something a little more community-minded, community-based, collaborative. And so I ended up spending a lot of time at the theater department. I had some friends who I met in the dorms who were actors, and they always seemed like they were having like just way more fun than anybody else. So that just got me very curious, and I started taking some classes and just got really hooked by the act of not just writing something. Like, I had been writing something, spending a lot of time, you know, this solitary pursuit of writing by myself alone in the dark. And then I just loved the process of still having that private space, but also being able to take that work and to get into a room with people and just work on it together. It was pretty exciting revelation for me that I just really responded to that type of working environment. And that is what led me to pursue a life in the theater.
That's amazing. So when you were here at IU, were the projects that you were working on, were you mostly sort of like running those rooms and putting together projects yourself? Or how did you get involved with it? What was the step in between, you know, getting into class and sort of meeting the people along the way and getting into rooms where you were working on your material? Did you organize your friends? How did that come about?
A little bit of both. Yeah, there was an organization called the University Players. I don't know if that's still...
Oh my gosh, yeah. UP is
really?
Is out and about. Yeah.
They're, that's amazing.
They actually have really... Trelli. They have really interesting seasons. I think they just had a production of something.
Yeah, I remember because this was late. I think it was like it took me 5 years to graduate. But in like either my fourth or maybe it was my fifth year, Chris Petrelli, who I believe founded it, just said, hey, I want to start just doing student-run work. We're going to do our own stuff. So we, like, booked up the T300 Studio Theater. That's,
oh, wow.
I don't know if that's like it's like a storage space now. Right? But that used to be the Studio Theater, and we would just put up, like, student-run shows there. So, yeah, it was a pretty exciting energy, and there were a lot of people like Chris doing, like, these really proactive things to try to get, you know, just opportunities to practice, to cultivate relationships and to do stuff that might not otherwise be able to be done on, you know, on the university's dime.
That's so exciting. Yeah, I actually just looked up the most recent production that they did was She Kills Monsters, actually. Another play by an Asian American playwright. And yeah. The next thing they've got coming up for the listeners at home, they're doing American Idiot towards the end of the month. They're going to put up Green Day's American Idiot.
Wow.
So yeah, that's so cool that you were involved with UP. So did UP sort of put up readings or workshop productions of your work, or how did that happen?
Oh, we just put up shared notes. Yeah,
that's
we did
amazing.
Like totally DIY, like full Yeah, it was like student actors, student designers, student stage managers, student directors, student producers, like everything from the ground up. And it was really cool. And it was a mix of new plays by people in the playwriting program and folks doing, existing work. It was really cool energy. I think it was like once a year they would do something. I think the first thing they did was, that I got involved with, was an evening of one acts. And it was like the first 10-minute play that I had written.
Oh, cool.
And we just did a full production of it.
That's awesome. Yeah. This year, I think now they've moved to a model where IU's University Players does like one original show a year and the other ones are sort of established shows. And so the show that they're doing this year is Ribs by my friend and colleague, Catherine De La Rosa, who's another Asian American playwright. So it's funny that they have sort of this history of doing that kind of work. That's awesome. I wanted to sort of pivot a little bit. Over the summer, you mentioned to me that you were part of a protest that led to the creation of the ACC, the Asian Culture Center here on campus. And I'm curious if you can speak a little bit about what that experience was like and how you got involved and what that sort of moment was like on campus.
Yeah, it was an intense thing. And this was my fifth year. It was a strange time. There was just a lot of racial tension on campus. There were some hazing incidents, some issues with like harassment of members of the Black Student Union, instances of harassment involving some faculty of color. And there just wasn't a lot of resource on campus at that time. And so a coalition of student leaders, and I only got involved really by proximity, student leaders from various student organizations around that time, like the leaders of the Black Student Union, leaders of the Women's Student Union, Latinos Unidos, OUT, Asian American Association, sort of got together and said, hey, what can we do here? And what it led to was the creation of this organization that was informally known as the Student Coalition. And I believe it was like in January of 98, we created a list of demands and staged an event like outside of the building that has the president's office, but I forget what it's called. I think it's near the sample gates. Mm-hmm. But it was a really cool moment because it was a lot of people from different groups getting together saying, hey, these are the things that we need. And a lot of that stuff was met, or at least progress was made towards those things. And that list of demands included things like a concretized plan for the recruitment and retention of students of color and faculty of color. Mm-hmm. The creation of an Asian Cultural Center was one of those. Latino Studies program. All kinds of things that we had observed working on campuses, other campuses around the country, but that hadn't been part of the conversation in Bloomington. And so that moment, it was pretty galvanizing. It was a great time to connect with student leaders from a multiplicity of different social identities and locations. And it really did lead to some awesome things. It's really exciting to me that you're talking to me from the Asian Culture Center. I've never been able to visit. It was built like after I graduated. I graduated the spring of 98. And I believe it's like the anniversary now, right? It was 99 that it was opened.
Yeah. I think it actually might have even opened in the fall of 98 because I think this week they celebrated their 21st anniversary. So
cool.
They might have opened just as soon as you left. I'm curious, as far as students now, you know, getting together and organizing for change, do you have any thoughts on who you were a part of was successful that we can steal from or take a look at?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to be honest, like, I mean, I can't really take credit for or feel like I feel lucky to have been in those rooms. I think that there was a lot of leadership exhibited by people who had a lot of great force of will, a lot of just organizing practice, and a lot of knowledge about models that had worked at other campuses around the country. And I think that kind of leadership is really essential. But I also think that kind of leadership isn't something that you have to wait for, you know? I think that kind of thing, like similarly with University Players, it was just like having the audacity to be like, no, we're just going to do this. We're just going to do it ourselves. We're going to do it on as grand a scale as we possibly can. And just sort of deciding you want to do that. And that was kind of like the best MO to have at a time when you're you know, you're on a university. You just have the opportunity, you have the community. There's just so much possibility there. The things that you can just say, oh, what is it that I want to do? What do I want to do in the world? What is my vision for the future? What is my vision for the things that I lack? My experience at the university now that I think would benefit the university. And just saying, you know, I'm just going to give it a try. Like one of the, like the reason my being at IU was so, like I think about it so fondly and I experienced it so passionately was because it felt like it was like this grand experimentation. It was like I was constant, like everything from like being like, oh, I want to be a playwright. I want to work in theater. All of that was like just trying things on, right? And just saying, hey, I'm a playwright, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like, let me learn and see if I want to. It's like, no, I'm a playwright right now. That's what I'm doing, you know? Like it's a time when I felt like I could just try stuff. So it was like I was in these bands. This is a long answer. I'm going around this in a very circuitous way. But I'm going to get to a point, I promise. Is that I used to be in these bands. Like we would start these bands with friends of mine, musicians. I knew a lot of musicians. And we would just like start a band and we'd write all these songs and we would practice like for weeks and then we would play a show in some of these basements one time and then be like, that was fun. Let's start another band. A totally different band with a totally different aesthetic, you know, a totally different song. We'd just do it all over again. And that felt like I just loved that energy. I loved that activity of just saying, we're just going to do this thing and we're going to go in whole hog and it's going to be what it's going to be. And the point isn't to you know, become the most successful band in the world, but the point is to learn something from it, to let it be a journey, to let it be an adventure. And like that's the thing I try to carry with me all the time in my life now as a writer, in my experiences as a producer, the administrator, everything that I do, I try to bring that feeling of adventure because I think it just makes everything a little more vibrant. Never is that energy more, like it's easier to get people on board when you're like in a university setting. Like that was the time when, you know, like my involvement in these organizations is really because somebody was like, hey, this thing is happening. You want to get in on this? And I'd be like, yeah, I'll do that. You know, and then I feel I would jump into these things, you know, because somebody's energy was so infectious that I just was like, yeah, I want to do that. And by following those impulses, that gave me the ability to practice taking on that kind of leadership myself down the line.
So I remember seeing your play, The Wong Kids, when it was, I think, being produced by Ma Yi down at La Mama Theater in New York.
Yeah.
And I remember being so struck because that was the first play that I'd really seen that was sort of created by Asian people, for Asian people, with, you know, with Asian American people on sort of every level of production. And that was such an incredible moment for me to see that work. And I also love the play. It was delightful. Your plays throughout have really strong Asian and Asian American representation, including The Wong Kids, including your play The Chinese Lady. And I'm wondering if that's always been something that you've been interested in, if that's something you came to, and sort of what motivates you to write for our communities.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, generally, I'm not that self-aware about why I write the same. But I will say that it's something that that feels very, very present. And as I've gotten older and as my life has progressed, it's become more and more important to me. You know, I've definitely written plays less, I guess, focused on an Asian American identity politic than others. But I would say it's always kind of there. You know, and I think part of that is just the pure craft thing of playwriting as an activity is one in which your lens as an individual, as an artist, is ever present. Like, it's hard to write a play. It's an investment not just of time, but of emotional energy and all of that. Like, in order to do that and to say, oh, I'm writing this thing that I want to get people in a room and I want somebody to memorize this thing, you know, it creates this obligation that, oh, how much have I investigated? How much have I invested in this? that I'm willing to tell somebody to memorize. You know, there's more responsibility with that than there is writing like something that a person can, you know, is designed to be read by a solitary person and then put on the shelf, right? Mm. And so because of that, like, there's always this awareness. Anytime I sit down to write any story, it's like, what is it? What do I have to say about it? And in terms of what I want to say about it, like, the thing about working on it collaboratively and putting it in front of people, like a live audience, is to say, I want this to do something in the world. I want people to experience this collectively. And to do something like that creates this sense of needing to know, okay, well, then who am I? Mm. Who am I? And what am I bringing to this story? What is my emotional connection to this story? And what do I want to do in the world? Like, what do I want the stories that I tell to, what function do I want them to serve in the world? And by asking those questions, inevitably, you have to turn inward and be really self-reflective on an emotional level about, like, where you come from, who you are, what you feel, what your experience has been. And as time has gone by, and I've, you know, been able to work within, like, various different artistic communities, there is this affinity within, like, my peer group of Asian American theater artists, where I think we, like, when you talk to Asian American actors, like, they're constantly confronted with what being an Asian American body on stage signifies to an audience, what being an Asian American face in an audition room signifies to the people you're auditioning for. They're constantly confronted with that. And so I think that the Asian American theater artists I know, I think, are really at the vanguard of really analyzing and really understanding what it is to be Asian American today. And so I think that creates a responsibility within us as artists to invest that investigation with as much rigor and as much responsibility as we can. Especially since becoming a parent, I'm consciously thinking about, like, what is the future? Like, you know, I've been writing a lot about moments in Asian American history these days. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that investigation into the past, into what the origins of Asian America are, what those past, you know, who our heroes have been in that journey, what our traumas have been in that journey, what are the things we can celebrate the most about that journey. And then just thinking of, you know, really researching that stuff makes me think a lot about what does that mean for the present? What can it mean for the future? And so in terms of what I want, like the question that I mentioned before that I always ask myself, it's like, what do you want to do in the world? I think of that in two ways. Like, the grand scale is, like, in these plays about Asian American history, to project some sort of vision of what the future is, of what it is to be an Asian American, and by extension, what it is to be an American. And by extension of that, what is it to be a citizen in the world? But there's also a much more intimate version of that, a much more intimate answer, which is about, like, what do I want the experience of my kids to be? How do I want them to have to answer these questions? What's the difference between how they look at this history versus how I look at this history? How my parents looked at this history. And so keeping it both in grand terms and in very intimate terms, I think that's the lens I approach the artistic expression of it, so that it feels at once very immediate, but also zooms out as much into the future as I possibly can.
That's really beautiful. I'm wondering what's sort of exciting to you, and you sort of spoke on this a little bit, but what's exciting to you about sort of the landscape of Asian American theater today? What are you looking forward to seeing, and what are you seeing that is thrilling to you right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a really, really great time. At Mayi, there's this Mayi Writers Lab that Sung Noh founded in 2004. And at that time, you know, it was really rare to see an Asian American author have a play produced on a major theater if it wasn't David Henry Law. Like, it almost never happened. And now, like, there are so many. There are just so many really exciting, really undeniably extraordinary voices in the landscape. You know, they're so varied in aesthetic. They're so varied in approach, tone, in the things that they want to do in the world. It's really, really incredibly exciting. The kind of cultural conversation that's happening in that writing and through that writing is one of immense variety. There's stuff that really aggressively interrogates the history of the identity and the politics behind it. And then there's stuff that really aggressively just explodes those notions and tries to expand the popular prescription of what it is to be an Asian American in ways that are deeply unexpected. And I think that all of the above approach is really necessary. And I'm just so heartened by the fact that there's so much great stuff coming out of that, of these writers.
The next question I have for you is sort of a broader question. I'm wondering who's in your artistic family tree, both in terms of artists that you've consumed over the years, artists that have informed your practice or process, or either writers, or it can be sort of any sort of artist. It can be musicians, visual artists. Who sort of informs your work and has informed your work throughout your history of writing?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think, yeah, I've been really lucky in that I've had a lot of pretty extraordinary teachers over the course of my time. At Indiana, Dennis Reardon, who was the head of playwriting at that time, was really the first person to get me super excited about theater. He made it seem simultaneously romantically difficult in all the best ways. And there are things that he taught me that are still like central parts of just my process. And then when I moved to New York, I was able to study with Romulus Limmy in graduate school. And he had just this really great approach as well. And so I've been very lucky in that regard. But I think that for the most part, the people who've had the most influence on me are really my peers, like my siblings in this generation of writers, not just my fellow Asian American playwrits through the Miami Writers Lab and beyond, but also like through the LARC, just being able to engage with writers from a variety of different cultural communities around what they're doing. And the way you articulated it before is really great, that you're sort of adding to a conversation. And I think that's so important. One of the things that being at the LARC has allowed me to do is to really look at my work as having a place in a larger ecology of, like, really a literature, like a contemporary literature that is moving its way through the world. And it's so exciting to me to think about my work as engaging with all these other works, all these other writers in these symbiotic ways, in terms of what they're doing in the world, as opposed to what I think can be the habit in this industry of being like, oh, I've written a play, I hope somebody does my play. You know, and being like, my relationship to the theater is about like this play going into a marketplace, instead of, oh, my plays are in conversation with like so many other people. Like, what I want to do in the world is not just what I'm writing, but also supporting and enhancing and then advocating for the work of other writers that I really admire. That what they want to do in the world is also what I want to do in the world. But I want to be a part of all of it. And again, it goes back to this kind of all of the above thing. Like, I think it's a good aesthetic and philosophical value, especially when one's thinking about strategies for change. Strategies for a better world. I think all of the above is always the first and best answer.
Do you have any advice for any Asian or Asian American students who want to work in the arts, either as artists like yourself as a playwright or in artistic leadership, also like yourself in your capacity for the work you do at the LARC?
Advice. Let's see. The only thing I can really think to say is just do it, you know? Like, I think that the things that I regret the most are those times when I've felt like, oh, I can't do that yet. I have to be ready. I have to know all the answers before I can start doing that thing. And the times that I have had found the most rewarding experiences or adventures are the times when I've been like, oh, I don't know what that is, but I'm just going to try it. And then you just try it. Or not even try it, you just do it, right? Just be like, oh, I'm going to self-produce a show. Okay, here I am, self-producing a show. And it doesn't have to be good, you know? Like, good, like, what does good even mean, right? It doesn't, like, what is the goal? Is the goal to like, impress your friends? Is the goal to make money? Like, these are the wrong goals. The goal is always to express something, to learn something, get something out of it, to have this adventure, to have an experience, right? And if that experience is rewarding, then there's nothing better than that. And that'll teach you what you want to do next. It'll say, oh, I know what I want to do. I want to do that again. Or I never want to do that again. Well, I don't know what to do that again. I'm going to do this instead. Then you try something else, right? Then you react and counteract what you've done before. And so just do it. And that comes with leadership too, not just the act of making something. Because nobody knows what they're doing when they're making something. The one thing I'll say, because Dennis Rudin, one of the things, my first playwriting teacher, one of the things he said that I mentioned, the thing that stays with me, is he said this once in the class. He said, the way you write a play is you have it all mapped out in your head. You know what it's about. You know what happens. You know who the main character is. You know who the people that, you know, that help, that get in the way. You know every scene, you know where the emotional climax is, you know how it ends, and you know what you want the audience to leave with when they go. And then when you sit down, you know all that, and then when you sit down to start writing, you absolutely, under no circumstances, are allowed to follow that. And I think about that a lot, because I think it's akin to this sense of just following organically the course of whatever's going on, you know? That whatever that plan is, it's the thing that gets you started, but it's not the rule of law. It's bad if you follow it, because it means you're not paying attention to the things that are happening in real time. And so I think a lot about that. It makes the prep and the plan and the point and all that stuff is, like, all that self-awareness stuff is, like, ultimately not that important. It's the experience that's important. It's the act of just doing something is great. Even not just talking about a play, but also talking about leadership, about saying, hey, I'm going to do a thing. Who wants to follow me to the president of the university office? You know, that the best practice is doing it.
Well, thank you so much, Lloyd, for talking with us today. I've had a great time. I hope the listeners have also enjoyed hearing about your time at IU and your career in New York. So thanks so much for spending some time with us here on Hereabouts today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Hereabouts with the IU Asian Culture Center, broadcast by WFHB in Bloomington. Our theme music is by Eternal Youth. Tune in to Hereabouts every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m.